Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down, my blood sugar is down, my weight's down, my health is up, my sleeping patterns are better, my metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out. And happy Sunday. Hey, we want to do something special for you. I feel like we can't leave out of our sights the failures and the still unresolved issues of the COVID-19 pandemic response. Our public health agencies, CDC, FDA, NIH, Anthony Fauci, they got a lot wrong. And as a result, lives were lost, bad decisions were made, the doctor-patient relationship was really intruded upon by big government, and therapeutics that could have made a difference beyond the vaccine, they weren't pursued. And of course, the vaccine was forced down so many of our arms, but it turns out that its efficacy was not nearly what it was billed to be, and its side effects were far more numerous than we knew. In fact, we just had a story about that this week with new CDC data showing that they withheld tens of thousands of side effects that people had reported, but the CDC did not make public. Today, we're going to talk to three rebels, three doctors who chose to follow medicine and science and not the conventions of Dr. Fauci, not the politically cool kids, not the World Health Organization. All of them turned out, because they followed the scientific process, to be accurate, to have been better advisors on COVID-19 than the agencies we entrusted with the pandemic. Dr. Robert Malone is going to join us at the top of the show, followed by Dr. Harvey Risch from Yale Public Health School. And we'll finish up with Jay Bhattacharya, a man who just won an award because they tried to silence him, but he prevailed. All right, that's our show. It's a special adaptation of a TV special we did on Friday. Hope you enjoyed. Have a great Sunday. We'll be back Monday with regular programming.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Dr. Robert Malone is known for his contributions, research, and development of the mRNA vaccine technology and for his guidance during the COVID-19 pandemic. A lot of it got set aside for a while, but now it looks really smart as people look back and realize how much he was right. And also how little transparency we got from our public health official. We're very lucky to welcome Dr. Robert Malone to the show right now. Sir, good to have you on.
Well, thank you very much, John and Amanda, for having me on, and look forward to our chat.
Well, we love having you on because we got to keep this issue in front of the American people. I think it's easy to want to say, I just don't want to remember the pandemic. But so many of the public health failures are still unresolved 3-4 years later. I want to ask you, as you go down your list, what are the biggest things that the public health establishment has failed to fix from the last pandemic?
The main one is transparency. We're still seeing the withholding of key information. I think the most egregious recent example was the FOID study on myocarditis from the CDC that was disclosed as a set of documents that were completely redacted, soup to nuts. I'm shocked that they would even consider doing that. The arrogance is stunning.
It has been incredible to see. And on that note, I think Washington, as far as a lack of transparency, that problem is endemic to Washington. And a lot of what they concealed pertain to side effects. And something that has come up in conversations with people like you and Dr. Harvey Risch is this issue of rapid cancer. And these cancer cases that are happening in people who are young, they're healthy, they don't have any history of these types of cancers. Can you just give us an update on that?
Well, and one recent that's been in the news that you can't establish cause and effect. This is like the attempts to establish cause and effect between tobacco use and lung cancer. You see it in the aggregate in the population. It's very hard to prove in the individual, but we have Duchess of Sussex in the British royalty that recently came down with a cancer at a very young age. So the slang term that's being used for these is turbo cancers. This has been warned of by a number of my colleagues now for at least a year. The evidence has slowly been accumulating, and it's still very difficult to establish cause and effect, except one can see in aggregate this surge of malignancy in people at ages that shouldn't normally be getting cancers. And these cancers are often extremely aggressive. The other group that we're seeing is those that have been graded or characterized as having recovered from a prior malignancy and then are now seeing a sudden resurgence of that in a very aggressive form that is not normally observed by pathologists such as Dr. Ryan Cole, who's been at the forefront of this and really taken a lot of spears for just reporting what he's observing coming across his glass slides.
So what do we need to do to get to the bottom of this? I mean, obviously, the public health establishment doesn't want to have a conversation about this because it might be a difficult answer to derive at, but what are the steps that we should do to get to the bottom of this turbo cancer phenomenon? Because, I mean, I know people in their 50s and 60s that were healthy 5 years ago, and they're on their last moments of life right now because they've caught this terrible cancer. What do we need to do to get to the bottom of solving it?
So this is going to take a concerted epidemiologic and detailed molecular investigation. One sign suggesting that there is this linkage, as opposed to just correlation, is the finding that many of these cancers, upon close examination with the proper tools, are showing the presence of spike protein in the tumor cells. That should not be happening. And that suggests a clonal malignancy that's been somehow triggered by the presence of nucleic acid, whether it's coming from a vaccine product or whether it's coming from the virus itself. And it's easy to distinguish that molecularly, because if it's coming from the vaccine, then you won't see the other parts of the genome of the virus, as opposed to if it's coming from the virus. So this can be investigated in a fairly straightforward fashion, beginning with case studies, moving through case series, and then moving on to much larger trials should that be warranted. So the pathway here is very clear. The problem is intent. And I think we can all recognize willful blindness when we see it, this unwillingness to investigate that which should be examined. I think no matter where you stand on the spectrum, I would think that we could all agree that this is an issue that deserves to be resolved definitively and merits significant investment on the part of, in particular, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and also the National Institutes of Health.
That's so important.
Dr. Malone, along these same lines, I've heard a condition that has been explained away by calling it long COVID. And I don't know if it's a result of COVID. I don't know if it's a result of the vaccine, but I've heard people describe the symptoms as them having to breathe manually as opposed to it being an involuntary function. And this is happening for months and months and months, in some cases, even years. Is this, in fact, long COVID or is it something else?
So what you seem to be describing could cluster into a number of things. It could be some obstructive or restrictive airway disease, or it could be neurologic. So the question your comments raise is whether this has something to do with an alteration in the anatomy of the lung. And this is something that we all had been concerned about early on in the onset of COVID, which is called interstitial lung disease or fibrosis. It certainly was what I was concerned about when I got the infection with SARS-CoV-2 in February of 2020. They may be having an emphysema-like disease having to do with this progressive problem of interstitial pneumonitis and fibrosis. Or they could be having a neurologic problem if they are not having a voluntary respiration, and that would be could be central, or it could be in nerve transmission, and that would have to be resolved through functional tests. In terms of its being long COVID or post-vaccination syndrome, that's going to be harder to sort out. But what you're describing sounds a lot like a post-polio syndrome that often historically required the iron lung technology if it's more advanced. So without knowing more about the specific patients and their symptoms, that's all that I can really shed on it, is it could be a pulmonary fibrosis, it could be an emphysema problem, it could be a neurologic problem, that could be in nerve transmission peripherally, it could be central in the brain.
Such a good explanation. I haven't heard that before. So I want to turn to the role of medical journals. Congress just recently announced they're going to have a hearing in the middle of the month with some of these medical journal editors to ask about the pressures that they were under to alter or not publish or to change the normal scientific findings that normally are published without any interference from the health and science community. What do you see as the lesson learned from medical journals, and how much interference were medical journals facing in the first couple of years of this pandemic?
Yeah, John, thanks for that question. I've been very concerned about this also, as has my good friend, Dr. Pierre Corey, who has really done a great job documenting a lot of what's gone on since he was one of the early victims of this, consequent to what happened with the Frontiers in Pharmacology special edition on drug repurposing that accepted for publication his original manuscript on ivermectin. What we've observed is that, and is now well documented in peer-reviewed publications, is that all the major journals are essentially controlled by very large publication consortium, many of which are actually members of the World Economic Forum. By members, I mean the top tier of the 100 or 1,000 largest companies that basically run the WEF. And so no surprise, they've been very responsive to commercial interests throughout the COVID crisis and have actively suppressed publication of a variety of information. And in order to even publish anything having to do with the vaccine, usually it's been required that one recites the mantra that the vaccines are safe and effective, a statement which has no intrinsic meaning because it's not qualified. Safe meaning what? What are the criteria for safe? Effective, what are the criteria for effective? These are just basically neuro-linguistic programming terms that have been required by these journal editors if you wish to publish in this area. And as a consequence, the public has been deprived of the ability to obtain informed consent. And that's the key to all of this, is the ethical breaches by restricting information, whether it's from the CDC, from the NIH, from the World Health Organization, from the pharmaceutical companies, or from the scientific literature. The real failure here has been to provide open and transparent communication about risk and benefit to the general public, who have been faced with a situation where they've been told to take these products, but not given the information to allow them to discern whether or not it's in their best interest to do so.
So important.
Yeah, and there has certainly been fallout in medical journalism. There's also been fallout for doctors. I think a lot of folks out there are more skeptical, maybe even distrusting of their doctor's wisdom. How dangerous is that for the future of medical treatment?
Well, in particular, the most egregious example is the loss of confidence and willingness to accept vaccines in general, not just these mRNA. But vaccines in general now are viewed very skeptically, and that probably has merit when you look at what's happened with the explosion of the pediatric vaccine schedule and the tight compression of these inoculations in particularly very young or newly born children. And that really has never been adequately assessed. The collective impact of all of these products being administered in a tight schedule. And so I think it's actually a healthy thing that we're now seeing skepticism on the part of the public that is forcing or should be forcing the medical establishment to more carefully consider those recommendations. And hopefully under a new administration, there will be a willingness to open the books on this and start to take some hard looks at it. There's plenty of money awash in the system to ask these questions in a rigorous fashion. There's no reason not to, except for the potential consequences if the answers are not what the industry wishes to see or the CDC wishes to see. Remember, the CDC is in a position of dual agency, where it's both promoting the vaccine industry and, in theory, assessing the safety of these products. And promotion seems to get all the emphasis, and the safety monitoring seems to be kind of backbenched.
Wow, a lot to think about, don't you think? Well, we're going to give you a commercial break to mull everything over. And when we come back, we're going to have another interview just as enlightening. Stay tuned.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back, everybody. While many of us said goodbye to the pandemic and everything that came along with it a long time ago, it was certainly earlier than the federal government. And now Just in time before the next presidential election, we are once again reading new headlines that read something like bird flu pandemic could be 100 times worse than COVID. Scientists warn. Now, could this be true? Is it going to be worse than COVID? And if not, how bad will it get? Well, our next guest has been leading the way in analyzing research and science rather than operating on emotion. And we are forever grateful for that. Dr. Harvey Risch is professor emeritus of epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health. And now he serves as chief epidemiologist for the Wellness Company. And we are so blessed that he is joining us now for this special report. Dr. Risch, welcome back to the show, sir. It's great to see you. Thank you for being here.
Pleasure to be with you guys.
Yeah. All right. I guess I got to start with this bird flu pandemic that I saw a headline for this morning. And they say 100 times worse. There is now, I think, officially one mammal case, a human down in Texas. Should we be worried?
Well, so people who work in poultry farms and poultry handling and perhaps some other animal circumstances might have to think about whether they have any risks, and the farms themselves need to ascertain what the status of their livestock is. But for the general population, no. This is not an illness that is transmitted from human to human. The likelihood of it mutating to do that is exceedingly low. And so, and unless there's some deranged psychopathic scientist who engineers the virus to be able to do this, and I'm not putting that out of the possibility, but still, unless that happens, it's exceedingly unlikely that this will affect the general population.
Yeah, good perspective. Often missing from the news articles I read these days. Dr. Risch, I want to ask a little bit about some of the other diseases that are probably tied to the border in some way, or just the transitory nature of our country right now. Measles on the rise a little bit, meningococcal on the rise a little bit. These are things that I think a lot of people thought, well, we got rid of these, we're okay. But they seem to be having a little bit of a resurgence. What's behind the resurgence, and what's the proper response for our public health community?
Well, it's a complicated question. We are not doing enough to monitor the health status health histories of the people who come into the country, especially at the southern border. We've certainly had epidemics, low-level epidemics of tuberculosis and antibiotic-resistant tuberculosis at times in various inner-city places in the country. These come and go. We take them in stride, and by and large, we take almost everything in stride as a society. We don't live perfectly safe lives. We have diseases that afflict us at low levels, like the common cold kills about 10,000 people a year. The flu is maybe 30 or 40,000. Traffic accidents in the same level. Gunshot wounds, of which 2/3 are suicides, are that level. Then there's fentanyl deaths and opiate deaths at 100,000 a year. And then there's the king of all of this, tobacco smoking, at 500,000 deaths a year. So we're inured to all of that. And all of this other stuff is more or less a distraction along the same lines as all of that.
Dr. Risch, I want to dig into something that you posted on your Substack, and I would encourage our entire audience to follow him on Substack and read what he puts out there. And you spoke about, one of the first things you spoke about was the management of COVID and the numbers that they relied on for management. And you asserted the notion that rather than even considering people who tested positive, that it should have been deaths, it should have been people who experienced serious physiological and medical repercussions. Talk to us about that.
Well, so the mortality at the beginning of the pandemic was wildly exaggerated by modelers at the UK who were believed rather than questioned. And so their projections of tens of millions of deaths in the United States were wildly exaggerated. And so our public health agencies freaked out, literally, instead of remaining calm and rational. And they should have followed the principles that were laid out for public health respiratory virus management in 2006 by Inglesby and Don Henderson and colleagues, who were the masters of that body of knowledge and wrote it all out. And then COVID pandemic came, and we turned around and did almost the exact opposite of all the things that they said to do, that we weren't supposed to lock down the whole population. You only quarantine people who are ill or very seriously exposed to somebody who is actively symptomatic. And things like that that there was no need to overreact in the first place. And this was all fear-mongered, not just to the general public, but to our universities, to our public health infrastructure, and so on. And along with this, what you recognize is that the COVID illness, for the great majority of people who have it, who've had it, is an annoying, aggressive, flu-like illness that for almost everybody resolves on its own after a few weeks, like most respiratory viral infections. Sure, there are some people who will have what's called long COVID. That's really long virus because it happens in flu also, that cough and other symptoms can be maintained for some weeks, even some months in rare cases. Sure, so that's something that needs to be followed. But the case occurrence itself is not something that we would ever be able to control. By the time we locked down, there were already a million cases in the United States. The pandemic was already, so to speak, out of control. It was everywhere. There was no possibility we were ever going to control it by the number of cases. And so a lockdown was counterproductive, useless, and damaging to society. The measures that need to be monitored for a pandemic of this sort are the numbers of deaths, serious hospitalizations, and serious outcomes of the infection, not the infection itself. And then the serious consequences of the actions we take in response to the pandemic. So the effects of the lockdowns and the distancing and the closures and all of that had serious repercussions for substantial fractions of the population. Those are prices that had to be paid and evaluated, and we never did that either. So we did not manage the pandemic properly. And as proof of this, the CDC recently put out its survey results. The CDC monitors what's called seroprevalence, that is virus testing of antibodies for the COVID virus in the blood supply in people who've donated blood, and extrapolates from that to coverage in the general population. And what they found is in the last quarter of 2023 that 87.2% of the population, is their estimate, has had COVID. Not another fraction has been has antibodies to the vaccine, but more than 87% had antibodies to the virus itself. That tells you that almost the entire population has had COVID, which means that all of the measures that we took, including the mandates, which were all predicated on slowing the spread, cutting the spread, didn't work because the spread everywhere, essentially. And so all of the stuff that we did, all the masking, all the closures, all the lockdowns, the vaccines as well, none of that stemmed the spread, which was the stated goal of pandemic management. So the management failed. That is the whole point of that argument.
Dr. Risch, thank you. You stay right there. And audience, you stay tuned because we're going to be right back after these messages.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back, America. We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Harvey Risch. What a treat to have him on. Doctor, just before the break, you said something that I think is the most profound lesson of this pandemic. There was never a need to panic. We had plans. We had all this practice, and then we just panicked and lost our heads. You're doing a lot of work, whether it's on Telegram, on X. What's the best way for people to watch the wisdom that you're putting out there, the lessons learned? What's the best way to follow that?
Well, I try to put out things that mostly that I write or that are on my Telegram and X channels, and you can find them by going to my Yale page, which is just Google Risch, R-I-S-C-H, and Yale, Y-A-L-E, and you'll come up with my page, and at the bottom it lists my Telegram and X channels, and on there I have the link to the Substack article that you mentioned and various other things that I've done, and I try to post as many a week as I do.
Yeah. I can attest they're must reads. If you care about public health, yes, those are things you got to read, folks.
Yeah. Dr. Risch, you and your colleagues who have been truth tellers since the beginning, I know especially prior to the pandemic, were widely published, widely awarded. And I think of some of these medical journalistic institutions, the American Journal of Medicine, New England Journal of Medicine, Lancet, and all of these organizations that were supposed to be putting out truth and information and serving as kind of a journalist for the medical side of things. It seems to me that they have all lost their reputation. Where can we look going forward for truthful information in the medical space, other than people like you, but publications?
Well, I tell people not to believe me either, that you have to validate the information for yourself, that you have to go to the original studies, look up the conflicts of interest of the authors, try to make sense of the studies to see what they're saying, what the data are saying, regardless of what the authors even say the data are saying, in order to know how nature works. And it's difficult, even for us scientists, it's difficult, let alone for a lay population. If you think that people that you know, that you've heard for some period of time through the pandemic, maybe even before, have provided valuable observations about science, then you can temporarily trust them, but as they say, trust but verify. That's the only way to proceed is kind of delicately, and it's a free-for-all in science, medical publishing today.
Yeah. Doctor, we talk often that our public health system rests on conformed consent. We are learning more and more how little disclosure we got about the vaccines, their efficacy, their safety. New CDC data out. I think there's some new signs of what the CDC was seeing in real time that we weren't being told as Americans. How important is this data? What are some of the early trend lines you see in it?
Well, these are the text fields that were in the VSAVE data, which was a large collection of survey data that CDC did on the general public that volunteered to participate in this system, where they asked specific, checkbox questions about mild side effects from the vaccines, but left a text box that you could just type in words if you had any more severe symptoms from the vaccines. And so they withheld all of that text box information until they were sued after FOIA requests, and they finally released or started to release this information, and now people are beginning to look at it. They've seen a lot of Bell's palsy in this and probably other things that have not been widely reported yet about manifestations of the vaccination. So that's one place. A similar body of information was recently released in the German CDC equivalent institution. And so people will start looking through all that materials and start trying to make sense of it.
So important.
Dr. Risch, I want to dig in on the vaccine skepticism issue, because due to COVID, I know a lot of soon-to-be and new moms who are asking serious questions and expressing serious resistance to what is the modern-day vaccine schedule. How damaging was COVID to vaccines? Because I'm going to be honest, I'm one of those people who I am now skeptical of anything, any vaccine that they tell me I need.
Well, I'm pretty skeptical too, and not because of COVID, but because of other things related to the vaccines. For example, that the childhood vaccines were all tested not against placebos, but against adjuvants. Adjuvants are molecules in the vaccine that stimulate the immune system to overreact to the antigens that are in the vaccine. So the antigens in the vaccine provoke the immune system to respond to make antibodies, but it does it weakly. And so you put in this adjuvant material and the immune system ramps up its response. However, the adjuvants aren't necessarily safe. And instead of testing vaccines against placebos, these childhood vaccines, they were tested against adjuvants, or they were tested against previous vaccines for the same disease. And so as one gets from that, information about the efficacy of the vaccine, but not about the safety. In order to know safety, you have to test against placebo. And that, by and large, has not been done on the childhood vaccine. So there's no way to know for real what the potential risks are in the childhood vaccines. Now, by and large, most of the public takes those vaccines and most of the public does okay. So as a society, we're still pretty much behind the whole vaccination process. But there's still people who are likely to be or have been affected in some rare but serious ways from these vaccines. We need to know that. We need to quantify it. We need to know that we've had informed consent about the risks and benefits of the vaccine. Some of these vaccines are for illnesses that, for children, are essentially uneventful, you know, like, well, I don't know if measles is uneventful for children. It certainly might be eventful for pregnant women. But again, these are trade-offs that society has to make. And the main thing we need to do is not to overload the system with every possible illness to get a vaccine, because it builds up the adjuvant, it builds up the immune response. And this is being done from earliest ages, like the hepatitis vaccine given at birth. It's unnecessary to give it at birth for almost everybody, unless the mother has a history of intravenous drug abuse, then there's a reason to worry about it. But aside from that, the hepatitis vaccine can be delayed for some months and need not be given at birth. Things like that. There need to be some semblance of rationality to this whole picture.
Such important things we have to get resolved. Sir, I want to pivot. We've got about 90 seconds left. You are working with a wellness company. I think one of the great outcomes of the COVID pandemic, if there's a silver lining, is this rise of telemedicine, this rise of the capability of a person to control a little bit more of their own health through these new independent opportunities. Tell us why this is such an important movement.
Well, it's us, but it's not just us. The wellness company started because we felt that there was too much straitjacketing of outpatient medical practice, limiting patients to be unable to get hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, yeah, and similar early outpatient treatments for COVID. And so we formed a telemedicine group of doctors who were willing, who had experience using these medications in order to do this. Now, of course, people are seeing other controls in the vaccines and other things as well. And we've branched out also into supplements that may be beneficial for treating long COVID, long vaccine, as well as emergency kits for having some of these medications available in the face of potential shortages in the future when days matter. You know, in order to treat a virus, you want to get to it as soon as possible and not 3 or 4 days later.
Oh, thanks a lot, Amanda, for joining me on this. What a great interview. I learned a lot. We're going to be right back with more things just like this right after the commercial break.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome back, America. We're going to continue covering the COVID pandemic, what we've learned, what we haven't learned, where we are in our response and readiness should this ever happen again, and get into Americans' trust, not just with their own healthcare providers, but with the media and the three-letter government agencies that help make up the public health apparatus. Dr. Jay Bhattacharya is renowned for his extensive research and insights into infectious diseases, and his work spans decades, encompassing a wide range of public health initiatives and groundbreaking research. He's not just been shadow banned, or what we call censored, on social media, but he's risen above the big tech censorship to advise policy members and help restore trust in a very broken healthcare system. Dr. Bhattacharya, it's an honor to have you back here. Some important conversations that I want to dive into with you, sir. Thank you.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
I want to start with one of those three-letter agencies that I was referring to, the CDC. I don't think there is a Hollywood PR agency out there who could reform their reputation, but I know that they are trying to do so. How can that even be accomplished at this point?
I mean, I think the first thing that has to happen, Amanda, is that they need to acknowledge that they were probably the number one source of misinformation during the pandemic. They told lie after lie after lie, maybe lies too harsh, but sort of incorrect idea after incorrect idea, and sold it as if it were the truth, the God's honest truth. Ideas like you couldn't get COVID after you that there's no such thing as COVID immunity after you get COVID. There's no that the vaccines have no side effects, that the school closure is going to be necessary to stop COVID, that there were no harms to masking children, lie after lie after lie. And they have yet to acknowledge that they made any mistakes, really, other than to say that they that somehow people just didn't, for whatever reason, believe them. So I think that would be a really good place to start. Acknowledge the truth, which is that they failed during the pandemic.
Yeah, very important. Our whole society has relied on medicine as an informed consent profession, that we go in knowing all the risks and then we do it. And we're learning more and more every day about how much information we weren't given for our consent. The new CDC data that's been put out as a result of a lawsuit beginning to show us some pretty significant signals of side effects. Your early thoughts on what the new data is showing?
I mean, you know, John, I think with any vaccine or any new product, it does take some time to learn what the full set is, especially when you're going to give it to billions of people. You only test it on tens of thousands of people to begin with, and then you give it to billions. You're going to learn things. What the CDC and the FDA really should have been doing all along is been absolutely honest with the American people that this was a risk, that there were risks of new side effects that are going to be identified, and then done everything they could to take care of the people that were harmed. Instead, John, what they did is they gaslit people who were actually vaccine injured. And now that with the new data coming out, there were a lot of people that were vaccine injured that I think the right thing to do is, again, just to come clean. They made tremendous mistakes. People lost their livelihoods also because they had vaccine mandates that were entirely unnecessary. I'm not particularly alarmed in the sense of like, I don't think it's vast numbers of people that they've identified with the vaccine injuries, but there are enough to be concerned about this and to like blithely continue along the way as if nothing bad happened. I think that's a tremendous mistake, John.
Yeah, great point.
Doctor, I want to ask you about what I hope is a change in public sentiment. Between March 2020 and June 2021, scientists at USC asked Americans what they thought their risk of dying from COVID was. The average answer was 25%. The real figure was 0.2%. And at the same time, the World Health Organization was telling everybody that the mortality rate was 3.4%. Now, today, in 2024, in the month of April, it is April, right? Do you think that people now have a better grasp, or is the misinformation still have a stranglehold on many people?
I mean, I think there still continues to be some overestimate of how the damage from getting COVID for at least some part of the population. Much of the population has learned the truth. You know, actually, I was responsible for the study that found that 0.2% number very early in the pandemic in April of 2020, and it resulted in a huge attack on me in the media. It was actually quite a stressful time, including in my own university, for saying scientific data were showing 0.2%. It depended on, of course, on age. If you were older, it was much, much higher risk. And younger people, especially kids, were much lower risk. The overestimation of the COVID death risk was a central part of the public health strategy of gaining compliance with lockdowns, with school closures, with all of the harmful things that actually ended up happening. And it was essentially a behavioral, psychological stratagem in order to get the population to comply. I think that is another problem that the CDC has yet to acknowledge, that it should never have been exaggerating the risk of the disease to begin with in the public. They should have been very, very clear about what the data were showing and about the limitations of the data. Normally in public health, my understanding of public health before the pandemic was that you try to keep people calm, that you try to give people tools to deal with the actual risk they have rather than bringing up risks that are far outsized relative to what the actual truth says. this. Instead, during the COVID, the CDC and public health did exactly the opposite. And it is, this is part of the reason why people have lost trust in the CDC. How do you trust people that cried wolf and were incorrect about their crying wolf? They should have been protecting vulnerable older people. That's what the data showed said to do. And instead, they told children and young people to disrupt their lives, damaging their lives for nothing.
Yeah. Sarah, I want to shout you out because a few days ago you received the Samizdat Award at the Real Clear Foundation for your courage in fighting for free speech and holding your ground so that the American people would be better informed. You haven't stopped in that mission. You don't rest on your laurels. I know you're working on a very important new project to make sure that we get the next pandemic right. First off, congratulations on the award. Second off, what's next in this project?
So what I think needs to happen is that we need a thoroughgoing first examination of what went wrong during the pandemic, and then a reform plan for all of our federal agencies that deal with pandemic response. And this includes the CDC, the FDA, and the NIH. There's, of course, the looming World Health Organization treaty, which hasn't really got an honest evaluation by the American public as yet. So what I've been working on is a reform plan that whoever gets elected president, I think, will want a reform plan to understand how best to reform the agencies that failed so badly during the pandemic so that they do better in the next one. Remove pharma influence from FDA, for instance. The CDC needs to be driven more by science than by politics. And as far as the NIH is concerned, and the support of dangerous research like the gain-of-function research that we've seen, come to terms with the fact that they didn't they worked to destroy the reputations of dissident scientists during the pandemic. The head of the NIH actually called me a fringe epidemiologist in the middle of the pandemic. Rather than doing that, the NIH is supposed to be supporting scientists, not destroying their reputation. So reestablish the NIH as an honest scientific broker as opposed to the destructive force it was during the pandemic.
That's good advice.
Sir, before we let you go, the Great Barrington Declaration, speaking of times when you were criticized by the media and other scientists, nearly, I think, 1 million signatures now from at least 50 countries, as far as I know. What's the future of that declaration and the impact it will have?
Well, I think it's a document from October 2020. So I don't, it's one of these things where I'm a little bit, I'm amazed that everyone didn't just agree with it. It was the old pandemic plan, Amanda. It wasn't anything different than what we'd done for a century of respiratory virus pandemics. I think as people start to look back and see the damage caused by the new pandemic plan, which is lockdowns, authoritarian force, fear-mongering, I think that people will reject this new pandemic ideology and go back to the old idea, which is essentially said in the Great Barrington Declaration. But it's not anything original. It's an old idea. I think that's my hope for the future of public health in pandemic management, is that it'll adopt some of those ideas in the declaration, mainly because those are ideas that public health once upon a time already knew.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah. I mean, you have been telling the truth since the beginning, and it's been refreshing to hear. And I wish more people had listened, because I think that the psychological toll, the economic toll, the mental toll, all of the repercussions that we experienced as Americans after COVID could have possibly been reversed or never happened to begin with. Dr. Bhattacharya, you're a national treasure. We appreciate you joining us.
Thank you for having me, you guys. I'm really grateful to both of you.
It's hard to believe, but that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. I'm really grateful that each of you could join today. Now, one reminder, a lot of people say, hey, John, do you have an app at the Just the News? And the answer is we sure do. And not only do we have an app, it's in the Apple Store. It's also in the Android Store. It allows you to take the Just the News experience and go in three different ways. You can watch our videos and television shows. You can listen to this podcast and many others like it, like Victor Davis Hanson, or you can read the stories that we do a day, 50, 60, 70 stories a day of the breaking news, investigative reporting, accountability reporting. Go to the iOS App Store or the Android Store today. Download the Just the News app. Read, watch, listen. Three great ways to experience the Just the News content and to join the Just the News family. And if you really want to get involved with the family and say, hey, I want to support your investigative reporting, John Solomon. I want to support the great reporters and the producers and the bookers and everybody that works to make the Just the News experience possible. You can do something really inexpensive that makes a big difference. All you got to do is join the Just the News VIP Club. That's right. What do you get for the VIP Club? First off, ad-free experience on the website and on your newsletters. No ads, no dancing videos, no autoplay videos. An ad-free experience on Just the News 24/7. Plus, once a month, you get to hang out with me at justthenews.com. We have a town hall. I sit and answer your questions for an hour. We talk about issues you care about. We cover topics that the other media aren't covering. It's an incredible experience to join the family, the immediate family of the Just the News team. Great opportunity. Sometimes we bring in our reporters. It's always a delightful time. If you want to get involved in that, go to justthenews.com/subscribe. justthenews.com/subscribe. Quick way to get into the club. It's $4.99 a month, $44.99 a year. Great way to support our journalism, make a difference, and get an enormous benefit yourself. So go check it out today. All right, folks, that wraps up John Solomon Reports, the podcast from Just the News. God bless you. God bless you. Have a great night. God bless this great country of the United States. Be sure to go to justthenews.com if you need that news fix. We got you covered 24/7.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.